Hi there, and welcome to our podcast, Mindfulness at Work. I'm Cara Pollard.
And I'm Beth Miles.
We're here to talk about how and why life works.
Or at times when it doesn't.
We'll discuss all kinds of topics that affect us and that either encourage or even get in the way of mindfulness.
We believe every relationship is improved by being mindful, especially the relationship with yourself.
Mindfulness at work. It all starts right here.
This episode of Mindfulness at Work is brought to you by the Genesis Foundation for Children, an organization that supports the whole child during the time of rare disease or genetic disorder diagnosis. Their funding and services offer a holistic approach that is directly in line with the mission of Cara Pollard Coaching. We are thrilled to have their support. Find out more about their incredible work at www.genesisfoundation.org.
Okay, so hello, welcome. We are here again with Carlota Nelson, and we're going to be discussing the Brain Matters movie. Carlota, can you just describe to me what exactly is the Brain Matters movie?
Brain Matters is a documentary film about the science of the early years and what it takes for all children to reach their full potential. I like to think of Brain Matters as being much more than a film. It's a bridge that connects parents and caregivers with scientists and educators, so segments of the population that normally don't work together. And it's also a screening tool that allows anyone to organize a screening in their community for free. Brain Matters is also a place to go for fun and easy to understand resources and takeaways.
Wow. So it's kind of like a movement, would you say?
Yes. We are hoping to build a global movement with Brain Matters. It's a non-for-profit initiative, and we really want everyone in the world to take it and own it and share it and use all of our resources and learn about brain science in the early years.
Carlota, can I ask the movement when it began? Did it come? Was it pushed from the science side? How was it your thoughts to put the documentary together? Like, how did this come to be with all of these different partners involved?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. After the research period, we decided to create our own scientific advisory board that helped us guide us through the end film. They supervised and gave their input and opinions and suggestions in every draft of the script and in every cut that we did of the film. And we're so very thankful to them because they are very busy people, some of the most brilliant minds in the world, and they so generously helped us. So after the research period, we began the production process, and after the film was complete, we shared it with some of our experts and legislators to get their opinion, and they all said, "This is amazing that you've put together a film that explains what we do, but I can't sit a legislator in my office for an hour to watch the film."
Right.
A group of people at the Center on the Developing Child at Harvard who have been really, really at the forefront of translating the science of early childhood, they came up with the metaphor of a house, right, of architecture. Mm-hmm. A good, healthy brain should be built from the bottom up in order to then reduce, you know, social costs or try to repair it later. That's not to say that the brain is doomed or a person's doomed if they haven't gotten this from the start, which is another beautiful, inspiring fact.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about the experience expectant brain, is that something that you derived from those conversations with the neurologists and the scientific team?
To really know that experience can actually alter that blueprint. Mm-hmm. And that is experience and everyday experiences with parents, with caregivers. What the child needs is another human on a frequent basis, right, and have those interactions meaningful. And this does not have to do with money or fancy toys or state-of-the-art schools.
Right.
They do have to be quality, but it's in everyday situations that parents or caregivers, grandparents, aunts, uncle, godparents can use everyday experiences to really, as brain-boosting activities. This was amazing for me to have spoken with Patricia Kuhl, who has done this experiment with language. And what she and her team have discovered is that the amount of words that you narrate to your child in face-to-face interactions, that actually determines the amount of words that child will speak at 2 or 3 years old.
Yeah, that was amazing.
So although we all knew that speaking to children is important and to babies, but to actually know that the amount of words is going to later determine the amount of words that child will speak is just mind-blowing.
Our studies show that the higher the prevalence of motheries or parentese, because both parents do it, that, you know, high-pitched, very pleasant to listen to, very slow and deliberate and clear speech, the prevalence of that in the home at 11 months or at 14 months in face-to-face conversation predicts the number of words a child will produce at the age of 2. And regardless of socioeconomic status, it isn't about money. It's about the parents and the time and engagement of the children.
One of the things Cara and I both thought, and hopefully when people watch the Brain Matters, they'll see the visuals that explain or show the synapses in the brain happening, right? And you see these connections expanding, and when they're not expanding, they're ending. So it was a really powerful visual to connect to this information that by speaking, by folding clothes, by taking everyday tasks and turning them into engagement with your children, you're expanding their brain, and you're also not overextending parents in terms of maybe it is a time issue or their day, you know, they're working parents and their time with their children is maybe they don't feel it's as ample as they'd like it to be. These types of activities still really matter. And to your point, it's not about buying a toy. It's not about fancy even classes. It is about engaging and connecting and then expanding that brain, that the experience expectant brain, which is primed for information, which is so beautiful to think about that way, right? You have this canvas that you're able to kind of add color and depth and life to.
For better or for worse, what they're exposed to and how they're treated is going to have a major influence on their chances to thrive now and in the future. And if we thought that socioeconomic status determines our potential outcomes, the results from a 5-decade-long experiment with low-income children in the U.S. might actually prove us wrong.
One of the things I think that's really important, Carlotta, and the part that struck me was the idea that breastfeeding, meditation, music, these are three really powerful tools that help to create these soft skills and build these wonderful human beings. And none of them cost anything, right? Mm-hmm. Like breastfeeding is actually the most accessible form of nutrition around the world, the global scene. Mindfulness is teaching oneself. I mean, meditation, we know what that is. And then access to music is as old as, you know, the ages and what that does for the brain. And so again, it's that wonderful way of sort of democratizing access to all of these things that build these wonderful people. And when you think about kids that are on the margins, right? And that to me seemed in our place of privilege or in our world where we have more access to things, that you can extend those offerings to families that are not in such privileged positions, and they can still elevate their children to a much higher degree of happiness in life.
You know, children, when they do not have what the brain needs in the early years, what they found is that these children, when they enter formal schooling, they're already behind. Mm-hmm. So what we need to do is really invest in the early years, so they're at the same place when everyone starts. They have more or less the same words. They've more or less learned the same things, and they felt that love and nurturing at home, so they can reach their full potential.
Do you think it's interesting also that I can speak for the States? Maybe this isn't the case outside, but the tug and pull between music education in schools is always like it's considered part of the arts, and there's always a conversation that arts aren't as important. I feel like breastfeeding is still not necessarily mainstream, interesting enough. And then even the idea of meditation is still quite, I think it's become much more, there's greater awareness around it. But I don't always see these really valuable points as feeling mainstream. And I wonder how do you think we just get better at that?
Well, I think meditation and breastfeeding and music and the arts are really a shortcut to happiness. Mm-hmm. I've actually seen the brain scans that many laboratories have shown me. What happens in the brain, you know, before and after a person meditates? What happens in the brain before and after or during, you know, when you're listening to music or even when you're playing an instrument? The bonding that is created when a mother breastfeeds her child. I mean, all of these things are so critical to brain development. Like we said before, it's a matter of educating educators. It's a matter of educating parents and legislators. For many, many years, unfortunately, early child care providers are just thought of as someone who changes your baby's diaper because you are, you know, you're at work, or give them the bottle and just make sure that the baby naps. Mm-hmm. But we have to start educating them in science and also giving them the salary that they deserve. Mm-hmm. They are the ones that are in charge of those brilliant brains to be.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a good point. They're not just keeping them alive. We need them to, you know, take care of the children in order for them to thrive and to functional, successful, contributing adults in our society. And I think that that shortcut to happiness is such a great way that the Brain Matters documentary, you know, kind of explained music education. They said that if you are trained musically, or if you're singing or playing an instrument, they show that the brain grows in exponential ways, that music is something that both ignites the left and the right hemispheres of the brain like nothing else does. And so that's why they continue to speak of how it impacts literacy and numeracy, because it ignites both those sides of the brain. So rhythm and all the ways you dance, it, you know, really formulate the numerical side of our brain and add to the math sense. And when you're repeating a song like Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, you know, that's really a literacy enhancing activity, even though the parent or the caregiver might be bored with those repetitive words, the child actually isn't. And so how we get this to be known in policymaking and to be expected rather than the exception is something that I feel very passionate about. I've seen what music does to babies and then all the way up until 5 years old. And I feel like there's, you know, when you're dancing with an infant, they're building memories because they can both formulate the movement and the music at the same time. And it actually builds a memory in their brain and gets those synapses going.
So in order to get all this information, you can go to brainmattersfilm.com. Is that correct?
Yes, that is.
One thing that you might ask people to do is to also be part of the movement by signing the petition at change.org.
Yes, that would be wonderful. We really need to get governments, global leaders, and businesses aligned. They are already conscious and have given early childhood a priority, but there needs to be more funding and more systems in place, because parents, to do it well, they need help. They should know that we have our film translated into Spanish, French, German, Arabic, Chinese, and Russian. We would love to continue translating into every possible language in the world, but unfortunately we don't have the resources. But they are the seven languages that the United Nations considers universal. You know, we really want people to share it and use it and learn and build amazing future citizens.
Wonderful.
Sounds like a great cause. We're happy to help.
Thank you. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Carlota.
Thank you for listening to Mindfulness at Work. If you felt inspired by our conversation, we hope you'll share our podcast with your friends and colleagues.
So we'd love to have your feedback, your comments, your questions. We'll certainly address anything that you'd like us to. So please contact us. We love hearing from you. Also, we have sponsorship packages, corporate support packages. We do executive coaching, team coaching, couples coaching, because we believe mindfulness really does work.
Don't forget to subscribe so you can stay up to date on all the ways Kara Pollard Coaching and Mindfulness at Work transforms lives.